Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 191 of the Outlander podcast, coming to you all the way from Hawaii, the beautiful, beautiful state of Hawaii. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This week's episode is sponsored by Blue Apron. We've talked about Blue Apron before, and we've enjoyed Blue Apron many times. And Summer and I have always agreed that no matter what package we get, no matter what combination of recipes or and food that we get, it is always, always delicious. So for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron will deliver seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. I know the last box that I got, I had some baked ricotta cannelloni.
Oh, that's vegetarian too.
It was
that sounds good.
It was one of those things where they changed it. Like they have a whole new series right now called their beta thing. Where you actually get to choose any three menu items from that week, and they have more options to choose from. But it used to be that you would get two meat dishes if you were eating meat, two meat dishes, and then one vegetarian meal. And this was the vegetarian meal that came with it. And what I loved about this recipe is that it was something that I actually was able to cook with my daughter. So aww. I usually kick her out of the kitchen because she just makes a mess. But this was something that it was easy. It didn't have a ton of steps to it. And, you know, it was like mix this in a bowl, throw this in the thing. And, you know, it came with a can of whole peeled tomatoes. So they had to be squished. So she got to get her hands all dirty. But it was just a really fun afternoon that we had. And at the end, she enjoyed eating it. So, like I said, I'm usually pretty hands-on in the kitchen, meaning I want my hands on everything and no one else's hands on it. But I relaxed that a little bit and I let her help, and she enjoyed herself, and we enjoyed the aftermath.
We both spoke into its deliciousness. Summer spoke into the variety, and I'll speak briefly. Well, actually, Summer spoke into its flexibility as well. And it is very easy. I am not a talented chef, cook, whatever you want to call it. And I don't mind going shopping. I actually don't mind. I don't like shopping, but grocery shopping, I can handle. So I don't even mind doing the grocery shopping. But whether it's stuff that I buy and then bring home to prep for a recipe, or getting the box, the wonderful like goodie box from Blue Apron, and then cooking it, it is not necessarily my forte. I actually, like I said, I don't mind doing the prep, meaning the buying. And so getting it is great, but you still have to cook it, right? So what I really appreciated is that you get the ingredients, but they make it easy for you. You don't, it takes a lot of the frustration for me. Because for me, the frustration is not the prep of like buying it and setting your menu and doing fun things. That's fun. Planning is fun. It's the chopping and the this and the that. To me, the literal food prep is what's frustrating. And they make it so easy. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy to follow recipe card, and everything is pre-portioned, all the ingredients, and everything, each meal is prepared in about 40 minutes or less.
I mean, just to speak about the pre-portioned section, how many of you guys have like half of a giant stalk of celery dying in your fridge as we speak? I don't know of a single recipe that calls for more than like two pieces of celery. So I buy this like, is that a head of celery? I don't even know what you call it.
A bunch?
Whatever. You get the thing of celery in the store. No recipe I've ever cooked other than than if you're like, I'm going to eat some celery, and I don't do that. But no recipe I've ever cooked that called for celery needs more than two to three stalks, which means I have an entire huge thing of celery that's literally going to rot in my fridge. So what I like about this is they send you just enough of all of the ingredients to make your meal. So you don't have a lot of the waste. You don't have a lot of leftover food ingredients that aren't actually part of your meal, which makes me feel better because I hate throwing out groceries that I wasn't able to cook in time.
That's true. Even if you're doing all of your own prep and all you choose your own meals, all your own recipes, and you go buy everything, that's one thing that Blue Apron does that I really, really appreciate that Blue Apron does, is that you literally get exactly what you need for that recipe, And there's no waste. The only waste, hopefully not, is that if you cook it and you can't finish it, well, then that's not waste. That's called leftovers.
All right. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/Outlander.
You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait.
That's blueapron.com/Outlander.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are discussing chapter 39, entitled Lost and By the Wind Grieved.
So, they're all at the coast, and there's nothing around but rocks. Of course,
can we just start this whole thing by stating that with a chapter title like that, no good can come of this chapter?
Oh, yeah. Diana gives details, but she gives a lot away in her chapter titles.
Well, she takes such joy in coming up with her chapter titles, and she takes pride in what she's come up with. So you know that if she's taken the time to put the word grieved and lost in the chapter title, something bad is about to happen.
Agreed. Of course, young Ian is beside himself with excitement. The mist was thickening as they got closer to the coast. They could hear the seals down below. When they get there, Jamie points out Ellen's tower and gives young Ian rope to go down and tells him to keep his shirt on until he's down there. Otherwise, the rock will shred his back. He gives Claire a nervous smile, young Ian does, and he begins to go down.
That sounded awkward.
What? Oh.
And he begins to go down. I was like, wait, what just happened?
Summer, keep your mind on. Mind up, head up, whatever. So Jamie is holding the other end of the rope, and Claire is watching over the cliff. She sees young Ian emerge and untie the rope and then wave up at them. Young Ian takes off his clothes down to his breeks and leaves them there, and he dives into the water. And they both just kind of like, maybe not outwardly, but inwardly shiver because they know the water has absolutely got to be freezing.
It's Scotland. Isn't it always freezing?
I would say yes, but apparently it's the time of year. It's really, I think, isn't it November? Yeah, it's November. It hasn't been long since they were in Edinburgh and after the first full moon after Samhain or something. So you're in November, so it's cold. They could only intermittently see the three islands given the mist, and they couldn't see Ian any longer. Given the tide and the task he had, Jamie figures it'll be about 2 hours before they see young Ian again. The wind was too high for them to have a conversation, meaning the sound would be literally blown away. But at one point, Jamie says to Claire, "What's that?" But Claire didn't say anything. He says he thought he heard shouting, and they both blame it on the seals. Surely the seals were kind of making a ruckus that we heard on the wind. They go look anyway, however. As they look over the cliff, they see a small boat drawn up along the island. They see a man appearing from the center of the island. He had something that looked like a small box under one arm. A second man came into view, carrying young Ian. Young Ian was either unconscious or dead. Jamie clamps a hand on Claire's mouth to keep her from yelling young Ian's name a second time. There was no chance they could get to the island and save young Ian. Jamie says they came from a boat that belonged to a ship, the two men did. Jamie leaves her and jumps on a horse and rides away. Claire's like, I don't think so. Also mounts a horse and follows him, leaving young Ian's horse behind. They make it the quarter mile to the headland, and they see the ship. Jamie has started to make his way down to the shore. Someone on the ship, however, then must have noticed them. There was agitation on the ship, Claire says, and more yelling. Now, she sees that the ship is blue with a thick black band or wide black band painted all around it. And it had gun ports in the band. One of the guns peeked out and shot at Claire. She throws herself over the cliff for protection, and the horses leave to join their friend, the one that they had left hobbled where they had last seen Ian on the cliff. So the horses aren't stupid. They're going to get out of Dodge and go back to their friend. And Claire's not stupid. She jumps down to protect herself from the shot. Claire looks out and sees the longboat being brought up to the ship. There was no sign of Ian and the other men. The ship brings up its anchor and sails away. And when I immediately got this line from Hamilton in my head, something, something, cannons go boom. because of the guns, cannons, or the ship's guns. But that just made me laugh. There's so much. I'm sorry, Hamilton, although it's a little anachronistic, it's still 18th century, but we're still way before. Huh? What, 10 years maybe? 60s, right? So about 10 years or ish before the revolutionary time. But we're definitely in colonial time. So all the main players are alive, but the cannons go boom bit hasn't happened yet in time wise in America. So Jamie climbs up back onto the headland to join her. What in the heck are they to do now? Diana writes, quote, "Impossible to believe that in less than an hour, Ian had disappeared from us as completely as though he had been wiped off the face of the earth," unquote. And for perhaps the first time that we've seen, Jamie doesn't have an answer. He doesn't know what to do. Claire sees blood on his cuff, and this she knows she can do. This is something she can help him with, but he won't let her help him. He is still thinking and concentrating and worried about the actual present situation. So first, they agree they must catch the horses. And they also agree, and this is very important, that Ian wasn't dead. And if you think about it, it makes sense. If he were dead, why would they take his body?
You don't keep the body, yeah.
No, it just takes a room and then it stinks and you got to throw it overboard. So why borrow trouble?
You leave it for the seals to eat.
Exactly, the harem. Whereas Claire hadn't seen them take young Ian aboard, Jamie had. Jamie heard one of the men speaking French. But again, that meant nothing since sailors were, as a rule, from everywhere, from every corner of the globe. He says the ship also didn't look English and it didn't look like a merchant ship. So we have some information, you know, starting like a list in your mind about what all the stuff that helps describe this ship. So they think maybe they can trace the ship. Claire asks if he saw the name of the ship on it. And this confuses Jamie. Why would they put the name of the ship on it if they wanted to hide who they were? Now, that's true. But not only is that the truth, it's also apparently just not the practice of, at least of the mid-18th century. Jamie is thinking of all the stuff he observed about the ship so he can tell Jared, since Jared has a much better knowledge of such things, of not only the ships, but many of their captains. He says that perhaps Jared knows someone who, quote, will know a blue ship wide in the beam with three masts, 12 guns, and a scowling figurehead, unquote.
You'd have thought he was talking about a woman.
Or that, but dude, Jamie had that list ready.
Yeah, if I'm ever going to, you know, witness some sort of a crime, I want him to be there with me since he remembers everything. Yeah. That had been me. I was like, it was a ship, a big one. There were sails and there was a gun. I know because it shot at me.
No, I would have said,
Ian's on it.
I would have said, there was water. His plan is to continue to Le Havre as planned and get Jared to help them ID the ship. From there, they may learn its name, its home port, or if it had any unusual passage. That is, if they're not pirates or privateers, because then all bets are off. Once they get back to the horses, Jamie climbs down Ellen's tower to retrieve young Ian's clothing and personal effects. That made me sad, bringing them up. I know he said he'll need them again when we see him or something like that. But just, it reminded me of, like, you know, collecting the stuff of a dead person. You know, that's what you do when someone is passed. You collect their things and you present them to the family. I mean, they are the family, but whoo, that was kind of sad that he went and got those up and then carefully folded them and put them in the saddlebag. They made camp there for that night.
I think it was maybe a mixture of that and also the fact that if they do recover him, he's probably going to be cold and want his clothes.
Yeah, if his pants even last that long. his breeks. Because it got the breeks. They can't give him any more breeks. They can find him some breeks, but they can't give him any more breeks.
Right, but as long as you don't have your small pants, but if you have big pants.
Huh. So they make camp there. Claire sleeps a little bit, but wakes up from dreams to find Jamie sitting looking out at the sea. He tells her that he's praying, and he is absolutely shattered about young Ian. Again, he's feeling the guilt of his happiness with Claire. And then he gets to the point. The reason young Ian is missing, he is fearful of, is because they were trying to get the treasure to use it for means related to assuage his guilt about him being with Claire again, so that they could essentially get rid of Leary. He thinks that that intent made the outcome different. He thinks that he maybe can't have Claire and young Ian. That would be too much happiness. So what he's saying is that because the other four times that the family accessed the treasure, it was a legitimate need, right? They were not going to survive if they didn't have this help. And thus, it was all okay. He is likening this failure to, or the opposite, right? The other ones were successful. He's likening the opposite, meaning this failure, to equal an ill intent, right? A wrong intent of use of this treasure. Claire tries to convince him that she came back to him of her own volition. He couldn't force her. He didn't force her. And he laughs and says, quote, "Loving you has put me through hell more than once, Sassenach, and I'll risk it again if need be," unquote. Jamie wants to get started right away. He asks her if that would be all right. Claire, her whole body aching from weariness, starving, stood up at once, brushed her hair out of her face, and said, "Let's go." It's just the way you say that. It makes me laugh. I can hear the little, I can see the look on your face. No, literally, I can see the look on your face. I'm watching at you in a camera. I'm just kidding.
It's creepy.
I know. Sorry. Creepy AF. Anne S. writes, "The end of this chapter is some of my favorite writing and a section I like to revisit. As humans, we seem to have need to see balance in the universe. If I do good, he feels that if he receives good, Claire, then he must pay for it with bad, Ian's loss. He knows that Claire is out of place and here because of him. He feels that he somehow does not deserve to have the wife he loves and the boy he loves as a son at the same time. The universe, he thinks, must balance out. Claire does not even begin to see the world this way. She knows that the universe is capricious and often unfair. She also knows them being together, creating Bree, and coming back together is not something Jamie needs to be punished for, but it's their destiny." A Mr. Willoughby side note. Anne S. writes, "Diana recently," and again, this was submitted at least a month ago, maybe even longer. "Diana recently gave an interview and answered questions about Mr. Willoughby. She, of course, sees no reason for any controversy. She based him on the real story of a Chinese man stranded in Edinburgh in the mid-1700s. No one knew how he got there. And he never learned English, and he drank himself to death." So if that were more widely explained, I think, you know, people would still take issue with it. I get it, because we're a very sensitive world these days. But I still think people would be sensitive to it. But if that explanation were actually put in articles, you know, and spread as much as this supposedly hot topic of Mr. Willoughby was spread, I think it would at least go a long way to help explain why she did it or why she chose it. So yes, it was her choice. And yes, she presented him in a certain way, but she didn't do it. And she did it for a reason. She did it to introduce the things that we're going to get to pretty darn quick. But she based it off of someone who actually existed, you know, apparently in the historical record. Does that change your thoughts about anything? Not that you needed to be. Not that you needed to have your thoughts changed.
No.
Eileen P. writes, "Young Ian is like a son to Jamie. To watch helplessly as he is kidnapped is a parent's worst nightmare. I agree with Claire. It is frightening when Jamie admits he doesn't know what to do. We are always counting on Jamie to save the day, but it doesn't seem like that will happen. Fortunately, Claire is clever at solving problems under pressure. Well, she is a surgeon, and ponders tracing the ship. Between Claire and Jamie working as a team, there is hope of tracing the ship and rescuing young Ian. Remember, Jamie said the following about young Ian in chapter 26. Quote, "You ken how things just happen around some folk without them seeming to have anything much to do it," unquote. Martina P. writes, "First of all, I would like to point out the beautiful description of the countryside, the mist, the ocean, and the surroundings. I felt like I was right there with them. Diana has that ability with her detailed descriptions like no other. When the pirates take Ian, poor Jamie is tormented and filled with self-doubt in such a way that I have not seen him before. He feels undeserving of happiness. Claire is able to give him some comfort. She states that he has been most unselfish his whole life, but Jamie disagrees and argues that he even took her without caring if she had somewhere else to be or someone else to love. Poor Jamie, always carrying the world's problems on his shoulders. The poor man cannot move an inch without having another problem to face. This chapter is, in my mind, the entrance to the Pirates of the Caribbean saga." So, that's it.
And that was chapter 39. And you guys, that is the end of part 7. Join us next time when we delve into part 8, entitled On the Water. Subtitle, Shiver Me Timbers. Huh. Chapter 40, entitled I Shall Go Down to the Sea.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/outlanderpod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpod, or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com. That my young love